You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. If you enjoy this weekly show, you can express your support for free, uncontrolled media by clicking on the donate button. And you can check out my new website at www.galactichistory.com. Tonight, my guest is Vinnie Eastwood from New Zealand, otherwise known as Mr. News, hosting his own acclaimed daily talk show. Frustrated with corporate corruption, Vincent went out into mainstream media and began making his own news by interviewing activists about real issues that truly affect New Zealand and the world. The idea is to get the activists who live and breathe the issues and are not bound by corporate or political parties to be the pundits, reporters, and watchdogs on the multifaceted agendas of the global elite at home and in the global arena. Vinny's philosophy, which I totally agree with, is that on the points we agree, we should come together and collaborate. And on the points we disagree, leave it for another time, because we'll never get anything done fighting each other. You can find out more at his website, www.thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, and he's also on Facebook. So let's find out more as we welcome Vinny to the show now. Hi, Vinny, how are you?
I'm somewhat fabulous is my standard response.
Just somewhat, huh? Well, one of my friends and frequent guests, Andrew Norton Weber, was on your show, which got me started listening to your interviews, and I absolutely love your interviews and skills and the humor that you bring to your show. Can you briefly tell us what prompted you to get into internet radio, and when did you start?
I think I was kind of listening to a lot of Alex Jones and getting all paranoid and stuff. And then I thought, you know what? I'm actually sick of being paranoid and sitting around listening to somebody else talk about it. I'm going to go out around and start recording other people talking about it. So I took my $11,900 worth of shopping mall vouchers that I got as a bonus for 1 month's work and my $4,000 cash. Got myself a camera and a little Mac computer, started going out, filming the protests, interviewing the activists, all the people with that hold microphones and megaphones and what have you. You start talking to these people, and unbelievably, they give you a hell of a lot more than just a little soundbite. They tell you big background stories about all of the reasons why they're actually there protesting with full, in-depth, vivid detail. And I thought, how brilliant is this? These people are actually now the reporters, or at least they should be, but they don't have the technical skills to report on themselves and have the cameras there and all of that kind of stuff, because they're activists, they're broke as frack, because, you know, the government's screwing with most of them. And so therefore, you need just some wily douchebag with a microphone and a camera or something or what have you to just, you know, pull the levers and do the monkey work and get these people's voices heard. You know, that's all that media should be about, isn't it?
I agree with you, and, you know, I'm 63, so I've watched media evolve since, you know, I was born around 1950, and, you know, I've seen it go just down the tubes, literally, and you can almost sense the time when it became increasingly controlled. I mean, it's always been controlled, let's face it. But it has become so bad that everybody's afraid to talk about things. Nothing is on the table, and we don't get any real news. We don't get the truth. So, who are some of the people that you interviewed that you found had more credibility that you felt you wanted to get their message out?
You know, to be honest, it's. That's kind of all of them. There's been times where you'll interview somebody who's talking about some real interesting stuff and has a big reputation, like Alan Watt, for example. That was a really awesome interview. G. Edward Griffin, I got to interview George Norrie for about 80 minutes. That was great.
You
get these really famous people on, and you just have a conversation with them like they're a normal person, you know.
Right,
you come as a guest on my show, it's like we're meeting at a cafe, we're just sitting there having a cup of coffee and a conversation. And I don't know if you've ever been at a restaurant, but you hear the person next to you at a different table having a really awesome conversation, and you like stop talking to the person next to you and you start listening to those people.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that, you know,
a relaxed
atmosphere.
I like that. Well, that's kind of how I've done my show, A Fireside Chat. It's basically, you know, talking with the people that I find interesting. And probably you've noticed that guests just kind of fall into your lap, that, you know, depending on what you're interested in at the moment, that somebody will show up that is that knows about that topic.
See, I'm more open slather. Anybody suggests a guest, I have an automatic, you know, send out a, hey, a listener asked you to come on the show. And then I give them a date and a time. Can you make it? They say yes. Boom. Go to the interview set. The whole process takes about a minute or two. So that's why I'm able to produce my own show, record my own show, edit my own show, and upload my own show for quite a few years now, and it's 5 days a week, you know, and now I'm just gone to 3 hours 5 days a week. Do you know anybody else who can put out 3 hours a day of audio and video by themselves?
Well, not too many people. I had Seven Bomar on the show from South America, and he's got a pretty good handle on that kind of thing. But no, I don't know too many people who can do it. I can't do it. I, you know, thank God there's BBS radio around to do that for us.
Well, see, the only way I'm able to do this is to cut back on things that I seem to be unnecessary, like vetting guests and research and stuff like that. So I'll get on people who, because it's open slather, like a guest will be suggested by a listener, and I don't research into that listener. I don't even know who they are. And then I'm just there doing a 2 to 3 hour interview with them, you know? And it makes for a really dynamic way of a show, because I really get to learn from the horse's mouth, not what other people have said about them, not what they've written about themselves, but how they actually speak, how they participate in a conversation. Some guests talk over you and never let you get a word in. And that's
I've had a couple.
And, you know, sometimes, and I find this quite funny, you have listeners telling you to, you know, you're a really good interviewer, Vinny, but please shut the frack up and stop talking and just let your guest talk.
Well, you know, we do what we do, right? And it all seems to come together pretty well.
Yeah.
Now, you're pretty well familiar with most of the global issues that are surrounding us, and I have a pretty good idea where you're coming from. Because I share a lot of the research on the global issues. What are some of the things that you find are the most disturbing or concerning for you personally today that should be brought to people's attention?
Ooh, well, you know, there's a long list. focus on kind of core issues, you know, how some issues kind of spread out and start to become involved with every other. So for me, that issue is scumbaggery. Now, scumbaggery is like a scumbag-like behavior. Yeah? It's pretty straightforward. And the thing about scumbags is, and the thing about scum in general, is it tends to rise to the top. It's not entirely different to how scum layers are on the top of a pond. And what happens to a pond when it's got a layer of scum on the very top is it blocks out all the sunlight, and everything down beneath the scum don't get any nutrients, they don't get anything they need, and they wind up dying off. And I think it's a pretty apt analogy, because that's pretty much what's going on.
I would agree with you.
So there's issue number one, scumbaggery. If there is a person who has knowingly engaged in scumbaggery, while in a position of fiduciary responsibility, i.e., you know, trust of the public and whatnot, you know, doctors, lawyers, presidents, politicians, people who you're supposed to be able to trust to make the right decisions. And if they're simply sitting back, lining their own pockets, lying through their teeth, and ensuring that justice is not brought to them or their little clique of Klansmen, then I don't think that it's going to work out very well for all the people that they govern over. Govern means to control. It doesn't mean to look after. And my expectation is that as long as we keep getting pushed and pushed and pushed by a scumbag, eventually a few people start pushing back, then more. It's kind of like they're their own worst enemy in a way, because they're so greedy, they crave power and control, and are willing to go through almost any lengths in order to achieve those goals. I don't think that people will put up with that forever, or at least I hope not.
Well, I agree with you, but it does seem like they're putting up with a lot more than ever before, and some of that's attributable to the intentional dumbing down of the populace with chemtrails and fluoride in the water, you know, frequency controls, propaganda on the television, propaganda on the cell phones, and then this constant selling of technology, which is kind of metered out to all of us in small doses, while the elite and the corporations hold patents and use advanced technologies that are probably hundreds of years more advanced than what we have access to. And so they just roll out a bigger screen TV. You know, they could do that for 1,000 years if we put up with it long enough.
So 1,000 years supply of guaranteed big screen TVs. Who wouldn't leap at that opportunity?
So do you? It seems like we're reaching kind of a nexus point where people are getting tuned in. They're clicking into underground internet radio. It used to be underground. Now anybody can have a radio show, and there are a lot of people, you know, talking about the global financial reset. Corporations have tightened the squeeze in kind of a figure eight design of multinational corporations. What do you see coming to the fore right now in terms of finances and the bankers losing their losing this kind of control over the governments?
I don't know. I mean, short answer, because I don't have time to research, read news, or read people's blogs and catch up on things and what have you, because I'm too busy recording, editing, and uploading new content. So honestly, unless I've interviewed just somebody kind of that day about what things are happening financially speaking up to date, I honestly don't know. We just switched over to digital television in New Zealand, and we didn't have a digital receiver. We could go out and buy one, but it's, you know, I could do without TV.
Right, right.
So well, my financial knowledge is fairly limited. I can say what has happened in the past is that bankers come in, tax everybody down, and you know how they say the only two things that are guaranteed in life are death or taxes? I find it ironic that nobody's worked out that it's the taxes that's killing them.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, didn't you just do a show today, a couple of shows today?
Yeah, I was on the United We Strike radio marathon. UnitedWeStrike.com, and do a monthly marathon on the 15th or the second Saturday of every month, just to encourage people to don't buy, don't comply, and ask why. Try and shut the system down for once a month. You know, sit at home and do nothing. Don't participate.
Yes, exactly. You know, we can easily pull the plug on things, and one of my suggestions is to literally pull your money out of banks, because every dollar that you put into a bank can be leveraged by the banks and loaned out as debt. So this is one of the ways that we're tricked into enslaving ourselves by, you know, believing in banks and that, you know, what's the point of keeping your money in the bank anyway when there's 0.0% interest being paid out? You're not making anything anyway. So, but people seem to feel that that's the way to go, and everything goes into the banks, and then they're swept nightly by computers. So that's an enormous control paradigm right there.
Well, there's a number of online community-based banks and loan facilitators where it's like money from the community. You know whose money is going into it and all of that kind of thing. It's very transparent. And what they've found is an upsurge in people's willingness to invest because they know that all the money's being transferred, jockeyed around for the community's benefit. And they all profit quite handsomely off it. And I think that what happens is we've got to, if everything that we were told about the system was true, we'd have a perfect society, wouldn't we? Right? So therefore, everything we're told by official sources are lies. And it's kind of one of my main philosophies of life is if it comes from an official source and they're telling you something, then it's probably the direct opposite. And if you can't make it in your own kitchen, then it's probably some kind of self-kill bioweapon.
Right. I like that. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Now, if we can just get the word out to the rest of the people. So what are some of the positive ideas that you have seen and that you participate in that are part of your own belief system or your own, you know, how you're taking action personally?
Well, I just take action personally by, I don't know, I guess I try to help other people be heard, maybe because I was like the youngest in five children, I never got heard, so now I'm trying to make up for it by making sure other people get heard or something psychologically Darwinian like that, I don't know. But at the end of the day, I really hate boring conversation. You know what I'm talking about? You know, people who just say the same thing over and over again, and they're incredibly dull and what have you. It turns out that activists have been screwed over by the government or really give you a boring story. as terrible as it might be, it's the truth. And that's why we've got to really laugh about it. I mean, if you don't laugh about the truth, as terrible as it is, you'll go frickin' nuts, won't you?
Right, of course.
So what people in this movement's problem is, in my opinion, you know, is that they're trying to wake people up. Let me explain. You can't wake somebody up. How did you wake up? Well, I forced myself to sit down and watch 160 documentaries in a couple of months and listen to copious quantities of talk radio, and now I feel like I've woken up and I can wake others up. Okay, well, hold on a second. Did somebody do that to you at gunpoint? Somebody forced you to watch all their documentaries, did you? You know, like an MK Ultra mind control facility or something like that. We're going to wake this one up. No? No? Oh, that's right, because you woke yourself up, didn't you? And why did you decide to wake yourself up? Well, statistically speaking, it would seem that seven different people have told you the exact same thing, which you originally thought of as crazy and conspiratorial and whatnot. And seven people told you something. That's all it takes. Seven different people to sell you the same thing, and you'll pretty much accept it. And what that occurs to me is, you don't need to go and try and wake somebody up, unless you're that seventh person and they suddenly click and start being interested in having a conversation with you. All you got to do is just say one thing, like a little information grenade, you know, you pull the pin, you chuck it out, and you walk away, and you hope it blows up in their face, but it doesn't sometimes. Mm-hmm. Just play your part, ladies and gentlemen. That's all I'm doing at the end of the day. I'm playing my part.
I love it. I love it. And you've had some pretty unusual guests on your show, too. One of the ones that really stood out for me that some friends turned me on to was the one on the cloning centers. I thought that was really an interesting show.
Yeah, he said, what was his name? Donald Marshall, I think it was, yeah. He said that was the best interview anybody had ever done with him. And to be honest, that's not actually an isolated thing. Like many of these really well-known guests and things like that said that I've the best interview they've ever done. Even John Perkins, who's on like 12 interviews per day and has done thousands upon thousands and been in dozens of documentaries. You know, and... I think the reason for that is because partly the accent, you know. I used to think that people laughed at my jokes because I was really witty, but it turns out I've just got a speech impediment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the other part is just being genuine, you know.
Yeah.
I don't like the over-processed, and now coming up and hold on until we've come up with this next guest and that kind of now sort of fast-paced live news, etc. Type thing. And actually, that kind of it keeps you on edge.
Yeah.
Whereas I want people to listen to my show and feel like they've been fishing or something, you know, like they're relaxed. They actually enjoyed themselves. They had a few laughs and they feel better and they actually felt like they learned something. One of the important things I believe is about laughter is it helps you to deal with the pain of the situation. If you hear somebody on my show who's had like their children raped and satanically abused by their parents-in-law kind of things, that actually really hurts you just to hear about it. And you need to be able to have some way of cushioning that blow for people so that they're actually capable of receiving the information without being damaged by it. And I think that's sorely lacking in a lot of talk radio. There needs to be a lot more smile in the face of your enemy and laugh at the truth kind of attitude. Because it's basically, you've got to make the truth fun. Why not laugh at it? It's just the end of the world.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, I haven't had anybody on my show that has talked about the global pedophile industry or the sex trade or the scandals that are going on all over the world. But we know that they're existing. We know that they exist. And they're far more pervasive and deeper than we can imagine. In fact, it does seem that this world is not what it seems to be. The more you dig into it, the more whatever you think it was, it kind of dissolves and gets replaced by something new. So.
Yeah, it's the same pattern repeating over and over again. You know what the word revolution means? It means to go in a circle.
You're right, exactly. There you go.
All these old communists running around going, I want revolution. And you want things to go around in a circle? Okay. I guess that's why you're a socialist.
Well, your philosophy kind of reminds me a bit of one of my favorite movies, which is V for Vendetta. That's one of the movies that I found really more entertaining and more resonant for me.
Oh, it was for me too, because remember, my name's Vinny with a V.
Oh, right, of course. There you go.
Yeah. Vinny with a V is very dangerous.
What are some of the more challenging interviews that you've done? Are there ones that you've, where you've had more challenges in doing them, and you've had to look at some other things that you've haven't looked at before? What would be some of those interviews that you might have had?
To be honest, interviewing for me is not a challenge.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
All right.
You just sit there and you listen and you take it in and you process the information to what little extent you can. But at the end of the day, tomorrow I'm interviewing somebody else. And I think what's happening to me now is what happens to a lot of people when they go into industries where they have to have intense empathy at the same time, not get burnt out. You know, like counselors and social workers and things like that. You know, I interview people at length who need counselors and social workers, but all they've got is me. You know, the poor sods. But yeah, as long as you can see that there is a lighter side to genocide, you'll be all right. I think what happens is some people go nuts. Like, literally, they lose all social cohesion. They lose the ability to actually have fun anymore. They lose the ability to listen to others, and they just rant it all out right into your face. They don't. They never really listen to you. They never really care anything about what you're doing. And I think this is kind of one of the natural side effects of the social degradation and the isolation that happens to a lot of activists. And the necessary paranoia that comes with the territory. I mean, if you're on a government watch list and you know you're on a government watch list and you are published as one of the list of subversives, you actually do have a requirement to be a little bit paranoid about everything that you do, don't you?
Right.
Because, you know, they're not only watching you, like they watch everybody with Google and the cell phones and the calls and everything like that, but they've actually got somebody at the wheel. It's not just like an aggregate kind of bit of thing that they're going to sell to banks. You're actually a person of interest. Mm-hmm. And that's an inherently stressful situation to be in. I'm quite lucky I haven't been one of these targeted individuals, and Lord knows why they're not coming after me. I hope one day that they do. Yeah. There's a reason why. It's because I have some real nastiness brewing inside me, like this kind of this. It's like I'm gestating a fetus of hate and anger for all the scumbaggery has done to all these people that I've interviewed. And I pray that one day I'll know what it feels like to be like them, have everything taken away from me, and heaven help the man who has to face me when I've got nothing left to lose.
Well, there are a lot of people in that position today, and there are more created daily that have nothing left to lose. And, you know, it seems that there's some kind of tipping point that could be reached, that is being reached, mainly because of people like yourself who are bringing issues to the focus that are not being covered on the media.
Well, the media is supposed to be the fourth estate, you know, in between the people that rule you and the people that work in a society. There has to be some kind of transparency mechanism, all right? And I was thinking about this today. What's the main thing, what is the most important thing that a journalist can do? And I think that's expose corruption, particularly corruption of the wealthy and powerful. Wouldn't you agree that
Well,
let's say there's one person on the street who's corrupt, and they're not a very nice person. They'll like steal money from out of people's wallets and things like that. Let's say they've assaulted somebody, okay? And you go, okay, let's prosecute that person for corruption. We'll give them 20 years. And then there's another person who's collectively stolen, I don't know, let's say $1 trillion or something like that, and has financed foreign wars and played people off against each other and has deliberately paid for programs to convince people to put poisons into the water supply and things like that, and is responsible for copious quantities of cancer. Nobody even knows his name or even looks at him, and it doesn't get reported on. You know,
right.
There's an inherent disparity here between those with power that can cause a lot of damage and those without power that are causing a little bit damage. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And it seems that the ones who cause a little bit of damage are the ones that are tossed under the bus, so that people think that there's some kind of justice in the world, and that all the systems of control that are designed to overview and act as the systems of justice are working, when in reality you and I and the rest of us probably know that they're not working, and they're designed for those very people who are at the top of the pyramid.
Well, in that sense, they are working, and quite well.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there are some people who think that they've already taken over everything and that they're just basically closing the loops right now.
Yeah, like in that movie Looper.
Okay, right.
Apparently, if you're a looper for too long, you get lupus.
Well, what are some of the whistleblowers that you've talked to that have shared information that we might be interested in hearing tonight?
Whistleblowers. Ooh. You know, to be honest, I don't know if I've really interviewed any whistleblowers apart from James Robert Wright, 32nd degree Freemason at the Supreme Council of the 33rd degree in Dallas, the most powerful Freemasonic entity in the world. And he turned whistleblower on them. He had married men who were 33rd degree Masons, like making sexual passes at him, like they figured because he was gay or whatever, it was just all on. Like daily he had to put up with this kind of thing. They practiced methodologies of mind control, like tried to split him into two personalities. Okay, now you're James, you know, or now you're Jay instead, you know. And they had access to this thing called a Sentinel program, which was a list of every single Freemason, what their job is, where they live, all those details and everything. And you're supposed to obey your brothers. So what he found was happening is that people who had become enemies of Freemasonry or exposing certain backroom deals, pedophile rings and things of that nature were actually having their cases starting to be investigated or their investigations taken over by Freemasons that the Supreme Council had found on that list. Local law enforcement, lawyers, doctors, nurses, an entire gargantuan web of corruption kind of thing here with the ability to cover up its own crimes. And so I asked him, are you saying that the Supreme Council of the 33rd degree is, like, in no uncertain terms, the Illuminati? And he goes, yes. I found that quite a compelling thing, especially from somebody who comes from the family lineage to get into that level of Freemasonry. He got attained 32nd degrees at a time where most people who got to their 32nd degree were like very elderly, you know, like in their 70s and 80s. He was still in his 20s by the time he did it. He showed remarkable promise. And what happens is the organization has the ability to keep secret from the bulk of its membership what it is at its very core all the way up there. It has a public face and then it has a very, very private face, which I'd probably say close to 99% of Masons worldwide would never be made aware of it at any point. And if they were made aware of it, they were either sworn to secrecy or if they wanted to talk, they got killed. And that's what happened to James. They tried to kill him several times. There was so many stories he was telling me, like on Skype and what have you, just messaging me. He now has a had a bodyguard at one point. He called me up in the middle of the night. He'd been drinking because he was just scared out of his mind and he couldn't sleep kind of thing and just wanted somebody to talk to. I spent hours and hours on the phone with that guy up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, can't sleep because he's so freaking scared, you know, just kind of counseling him and making sure he's all right and making him laugh and sending him songs and stuff like that to cheer him up. There's quite a lot of intense pain and fear that happens when they really are after you. And he's written a couple of books about it, which I think, what did he tell me? Like maybe John Malkovich is reading one of them.
Oh, wow. Wow. Is he safe today? I mean, is he pulling through this?
You're never safe.
Well, right. Yeah,
you know, he's moved from location to location since he started to go public. I don't know actually exactly where he is right now. I could just message him on Skype; he'll get back to me soon. But you know,
interesting. Well, you know, another area that seems to be seems to have been exposed recently is the whole industry of super soldiers and targeted individuals. Have you been exposed to that at all during your interviews?
Yeah, we've had super soldier roundtable panel discussions organized by the Laurie and Fenton, who organized the Super Soldier Summit. Did like a whole week of interviewing different super soldiers about different programs and things of that nature that they were all involved in. So it becomes when you're a host and you get exposed to such a wide spectra of information that I do. So let's say, for instance, I interview on average one person a day. You know, sometimes I interview two or whatever, 52 weeks out of the year, you can kind of average that out. So it's 52 guests a year. Been doing it for, a hell of a lot more than that. Hundreds, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of interviews, you know, all the time. I'm accumulating such vast sums of knowledge from highly experienced people who are usually roughly twice my age, who have seen a hell of a lot more of the world than I could dream of in my lifetime. And what I've found is that I'm actually starting to live vicariously through them. I'm actually starting to grab a picture of the world and its beauty and dark places at the same time. But what concerns me is that I haven't earned any of that knowledge. It's been given to me freely, and that means I haven't really gone through what it takes in order to really acquire those stories and those skills. I think pain and suffering, as trauma-based mind control has taught people, is actually one of the strongest teachers, you know? I think it's necessary to listen to things that make you uncomfortable and things that you find really painful to hear about so that you can actually develop. You can go to places where you haven't been before. You can open your mind a little bit further and let in some of that uncomfortableness about certain topics and then learn how to deal with it. It's kind of like resistance training, if you will. And just like everybody else is thinking about movies, how they used to not be anywhere near as graphically violent as some of the torture flicks and ghost stories and things of that nature that we've got on the films these days. It was just really horrific, graphically violent, sadistic, satanic kind of stuff going on in a lot of horror movies. And we think it's quite quaint. You know? So I figure if you're capable of putting up with the truth, as ugly as it is, way uglier than any frickin' film, because it's real, I think that will enable you some certain very, very strong coping mechanisms in order to develop, in order to keep actually doing that. And we do need to learn how to cope with reality. And I think we've been ignoring it for far too long.
What about the whole idea? There's a whole movement in the UFO world that we have had visitors for hundreds of thousands or millions of years, and there are stories surfacing now about the Anunnaki, you know, using humans for slave labor. What kind of things have come up in your research about the possibility that there is contact with other extraterrestrial races and that they're here now or not here now?
I've interviewed kind of like the top people in the UFO field. And there is definitely alien contact. There is definite government denial of that alien contact. There is definitely advanced technology involved here. And there's also definitely many advanced classified military aircraft, which people think are piloted by aliens because they look so advanced. All right. So half the time, I'm just making stuff up here. I don't know. Some of the time, here we go. let me back it up again. Allegedly, some of the time.
Okay.
There's actually an alien involved and somebody's really telling you the truth. And allegedly some of the other times it's just a classified military aircraft. Now, here's another angle which I found particularly interesting about the whole alien phenomenon culture is not only is it possibly going on, but also what if the government was deliberately blowing it out of proportion through their silence and flying around classified aircraft or whatever so that they could eventually stage some kind of false alien invasion. And then all the humans will just go, oh, my God, there's some kind of intergalactic alien space creature. It's going to eat up our entire planet unless we have a one-world government. We need to fight the aliens. Join the World Army, everybody. There's a sign-up booth over there. You get dog tags and boots and a knife.
Right, no kidding. No kidding. And the technology exists, as you know, to fake that kind of thing.
Yeah, Project Bluebeam, I think it is, you know. Allegedly, there's some kind of like set of satellites out there that have holographic projection technology on them as well. It could work on a religious cult kind of thing, wouldn't it? You know, Arthur, the Holy Grail, you must find it and use it as a sippy cup. Oh, yes, Lord. Oh, yes. You never know what kind of people... what kind of stuff people could pull off. You know, imagine if you could pull off the biggest practical joke in all history. I think you'd have to do it quite far if you could top 9/11. Wouldn't that be the biggest practical joke ever? It was jet fuel, bro. Really? What does jet fuel burn at? I don't know, like 700 degrees Fahrenheit. And what does steel melt at? I don't know, like 1,800, 1,400 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that. So it's like twice or more than twice the heat that it actually would take to melt it. Yeah, but it melted it somehow. Yeah, and then it exploded into particleized dust. Yeah. Dude, you're freaking retarded if you think that that's the case, okay? Who knows what actually did happen? There's a number of working theories, but everybody agrees, no matter what their theory is, on one immutable truth. Whatever the government told us, wasn't it?
That's right. I think we can pretty much agree on that one. And, you know, Dr. Judy Wood makes a very good case for dustification in her book, and you might have even had her on your show, and she has a PhD in engineering, and she spent a lot of time researching that and makes a very convincing case for some kind of reverse energy weapon that that's a reversal of free energy. In other words, the technology has existed, and they've reversed it and used that in the 911 traumatic experience for everybody. And, you know, people fight over things, and your philosophy is probably similar to mine in that let's find the things we agree on, because that's part of the control system dividing us so that we can be conquered, and we're already divided, so let's get together on the points we agree on. And so there's a big debate between people about, well, there were nuclear flash points put into the beams, and they knew they were doing it, and they were building it. And then all Judy Wood's theories are crazy. Why couldn't they both be true? Why couldn't there have been some nuclear devices that were used as part of the process and an energy beam weapon?
See, I was of the opinion that they used thermite or whatever it was, an energy weapon and a nuke, and used them all at the same time. So that everybody would bicker about what actually caused it. I mean, it's like, okay, a dude gets shot and then he runs into a burning house and then he starts inhaling smoke and starts choking to death and then he gets burned alive and then an air conditioner falls on him. What killed him?
Right, exactly. And while everybody's arguing about, you know, how it happened...
And accusing each other of being disinfo agents, and so you get near paranoia on, you know, and all of that kind of stuff. You know, it's just ridiculous. Stop bickering, for frack's sake, okay? Who cares, honestly, right?
Yeah.
Can we do anything about 9/11 right now? Can we stop those people from dying? No, we can't. What we can do is prevent the next false flag from happening by waking people up to the fact that there is such a thing as false flag terrorism, and remove a crucial piece of the New World Order's war apparatus. Imagine if every time they tried to pull off a false flag, everybody laughed at it and thought it was BS and never went to war.
Well, I'm looking forward to the day when that happens. And, you know, some of these false flag events, I call them false flag events when people are murdered in seemingly random situations. But... And Fukushima is one of those situations that I think is a false flag. But one of the things that I've noticed with the Internet is that people are wising up a lot faster when there's some kind of shooting at a school or some kind of event that seems to be staged. Most likely it was staged. And yeah. when you start digging into it, and people are catching on so fast now, right after some of these things happen that are very tragic or seem to be tragic, I mean, we don't know if they're tragic anymore. There are people digging into it and saying, well, no, there were actors. There was this person here, and they're finding discrepancies, and people are talking. So the cell phone technology that's being used to dumb us down to some extent, putting us in a cloud of, of a fog, is also being used to transmit information. So they can't stop that. They can't stop people from talking and sharing, and especially, as you know, people that are live on the scene that can share information.
Mm. Could you imagine if smartphones were in wide use the way they are today, back on September 11th, 2001? Could you imagine how many huge quantities of HD videos would have been uploaded within minutes?
Wow. that would have been great. And as you know, all the tapes and everything were confiscated. And the one film that I did see was that stood out in my mind was when the reporter was talking about one of the buildings.
Building 7.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's collapsed. That's it over my shoulder. As you can see, standing freeform, and it's collapsed, I'm telling you.
yeah, that was amazing. And, you know, the funny thing is that people just didn't seem to ask about the third building that was admitted to be taken down.
Oh, yeah.
And how did they
even on
how
the,
did
even
they
on the
10th that?
Anniversary, I was looking at Campbell Live. John Campbell is the official reporter. He's like the Bill O'Reilly of New Zealand, I guess. And he does a 10-year anniversary of 9/11. And, of course, you do a 10-year anniversary, you do a full one-hour show, and you don't once mention Building 7, do you, John?
Right. And I'll bet there's still a lot of people out there that don't know that building – nothing hit it, and it came down just like the other ones.
Yeah. I mean, we ambushed John Campbell on the street, actually. And
did you?
Yeah, talked to him about 9/11, showed him the pictures of those support struts, you know, those ones that were cut at a 45-degree angle.
Oh.
The melted metal on the side of them.
What was the reaction to that?
Well, I've been a journalist for 20 years, and there's no way the intelligence agencies could pull off an intelligence operation. They're just not capable of it. They're just not capable of it. Yeah, appeal to authority. Isn't that a logical fallacy? I've been a journalist for 20 years. And, just your own opinion, having no experience in working in on the CIA, haven't looked into Operation Mockingbird heavy, you bloody stooge.
Right. And besides which, all those agencies have been infiltrated, as you probably have heard from interviews. And they're fragmented, and there are so many hands in the pie that they don't know who's doing what anymore.
Yeah, so, it's a pretty incestuous mating ball of anacondas, isn't it?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no kidding. What's something that surprised you when you found it out that you uncovered and dug into in your research?
Well, I don't know. I guess everything. And then after a while, nothing surprises you. It just confirms how surprising things are supposed to be.
Right. Well, what are some things that
One thing that Cliff High told me, though, that the Earth doesn't revolve around the sun. We actually get dragged behind it like the tails of a comet, and we have a kind of a spiral elliptical orbit in that kind of stasis. That was a radically different idea, which I thought was very cool. Wasn't expecting that one.
Oh, yeah. I've had Cliff on quite a few times. He was one of my favorite guests for a long time. And Jay Widener is another one, and yeah, I love talking to Cliff. He's always he always gets your noodle bent, you know, thinking about things that he's put his mind to. He's quite brilliant.
Yeah.
What have you? I've noticed that Courtney Brown is one of the guests that I had on my show a while back, and he's talking about some. He's hinting at some remote viewing things that he's looked into that are supposed to hit in February. Are you familiar with that?
Not really. Or is it using remote viewing to say something's happening in February?
Well, yeah, there's something that they've looked into in their remote viewing experiences, and we're all being kind of teased along. And I know that Courtney and Cliff have, had a lot of conversations. So we'll see. We're in February. So, you know, all of the New Age predictions that were supposed to come about over those decades leading up to 2012, and I did a lot of research on New Age material, pretty much didn't pan out the way anybody thought they would.
Yeah. Well, I think when you're talking about the end of the world, nothing ever turns out the way it's supposed to.
Right.
You know, isn't that a shame?
Yeah, unless you're in a restaurant at the end of the world.
Well, do you know what worrying about the things that haven't happened yet is? What the term is?
No.
Anxiety.
What? Oh, right. There you go. Well, you know, I try to eliminate as much anxiety as possible by not thinking about things that haven't happened or that might be worrisome.
What I've decided to do is become a perpetual doomsday naysayer. Yeah? This commodizer is going to end the world. No, it's not. 2012 is going to end the world. No, it's not. Y2K is going to end the world. No, it's not. Nostradamus is a prediction that the world's going to end. No, it's not. Perpetually, okay? Anytime anybody predicts the end of the world, I'm instantly going to deny it, okay? And I'll be right every single time. And the time that I'm not right, there won't be anybody left to worry about whether I was wrong.
That's right. You got that one right. Now, what about GMOs and chemtrails and the rest of it? It seems like that should have hit the radar a long ass time ago, and it's just barely beginning to hit the radar now.
I never underestimate the power of the media's ability to not report on things, you know.
Right.
Oh, my God, the media must have been sure to report on that. Bro, do you know what the media's job is? It's to report some things and to not report others. I mean, that's their job description.
Yeah,
it's in the contract.
Yeah. Well, nobody told the populace that, that they should believe everything that's on television and not believe anything that's not on television.
Oh, yeah, and not believe anything on the internet. Oh, that's one of those internet conspiracy theories. Or you must have found that information on the internet. Well, hold on a second. Aren't mainstream media on the internet as well?
Right.
And don't they still suck just as much?
That's right.
You're sick of people with their intellectual elitism. I know more than you. Yeah. Well, dude, you do realize that the amount of human knowledge doubles every year, all right, with the information age, probably even faster now. So, you know, conceivably, everything that we currently know today might be proven wrong next year with our next doubling in information. You know, we don't know. So when people come up to you and deny whatever it is you're saying without even having looked into it themselves, of course, it's like, dude, are you telling me that you know everything when knowledge doubles every year? You know everything already? Is that what you're telling me? And that's your reason for not listening to me?
Well, you know, it's a tragedy when people don't have an open mind. But, it's like a parachute. You can't use it if you don't open it. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about was, what was it? I just lost it. Sorry. Well, go ahead and talk about anything you want to talk about. How's that?
Well, you know, that's how I normally do with my guests. But I wanted to ask you how you got into doing this radio thing. Why did you do it?
Oh, well, that's a real simple answer. Don from BBS Radio and his brother had the station. And I got an email out of the blue asking me if I'd like to have an internet radio show. And my first reaction was, what? I don't know how to do an internet radio show. I mean, how do you do it? I can't do that. And then I thought, I gave it a night to think about it. And I thought, you know, I will always wonder what would have happened if I don't take this opportunity to see what it's like and to just do it. you know, I will always regret not having had that experience. And I can honestly say that I've had the privilege of talking to some of the most incredible people on the planet, and it's been a wonderful experience, and it's really kind of completed my education. I mean, I completed it because it's an ongoing thing, as you know. Everybody that I talk to, I learn from, and everybody has something interesting to say, pretty much, with maybe one or two minor exceptions. But, you know, people are fascinating, and I find them fascinating, and it's finding that little jewel that's inside, and I've been really fortunate to have some of the best guests in the world over the last 7 or 8 years that I've been doing this, and I just so thankful that I took the that I had the courage to just say, okay, I don't know how to do this. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to do it, and I'm going to find out. And that's how it all came about.
Yeah, a similar reasoning process to myself, except I was offered a gig by American Freedom Radio. And most people, when they start off a radio show, they do one day a week or something like that, and they build up. I got slapped with 10 hours a week straight off the bat, two hours for 5 days. And been going, this is into my fourth year now, and most new radio shows fail within the first 6 to 9 months.
Wow. Well, that's an amazing feat, Vinny. I really admire what you're doing, and I love your show. And I guess this is a good time to kind of segue into the last few minutes where you can share, you know, where people can find you and where they can hear your show, and where are you, and let us know, you know, how people can find you.
All right. Well, most people misspell the name Vinny, but it comes up with the search term anyway. So it's Vinny with a Y, V-I-N-N-Y. My website is thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. And okay. realgorillamedia.com. So we've got a number of contributors and what have you putting out decent information that's well-researched and whatnot. And the usindependent.com is where I'm a contributor to, started off by the creator of Occupy Corporatism, Suzanne Posel there. Mm-hmm. And if you go to my YouTube channel, I'd appreciate all people to subscribe and stuff. All of the videos and all of my audio archives and everything, Mr. News Guerrilla Media is the YouTube channel, or just search Vinny Eastwood on YouTube. It should come up with it. So, yeah, all of my audio archives, video archives and everything like that are Creative Commons. So you can download them. You can upload them to your own websites. If you want to make a documentary or something like that, but you don't want to have all the expense of shooting all your footage and interviewing all the guests yourself and what have you, if there's parts of my videos and things like that you want to steal them, you know, and then ask for forgiveness later.
Great. Great. Well, Vinny, thank you for being on the show tonight. Keep up the great work, and I really appreciate you coming on tonight. Thanks again.
You're very welcome, and thank you very much for having me.
All right, I'll be listening to your show.
Cheers, man.